From London, this is a special edition of Talking Tax. I'm Siri Belousou. This week, we hear from Pascal Saint-Amans, the top tax official at the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. The international group is working on a plan that will change how and where multinational companies are taxed. Pascal and I spoke at the International Fiscal Association's Congress in London. We talk about the ongoing debate about taxing digital business and what a global agreement or disagreement could mean for companies. Pascal, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
I want to dive right in. You just announced that there's going to be an update on the digital tax work to be approved by the G20 in 1 month. What can we expect from that report?
What we will report to the G20 is the progress made so far. And the progress made so far is about trying to shift from the three competing approaches under Pillar 1, which is about nexus and profit allocation, towards something which would be more of a unified approach under which all the countries could try to negotiate a solution. So it's not a proposal that we'll bring to the G20, but rather some ideas of what a unified approach could be, and this will come from the OECD Secretariat, serving the 134 members of the Inclusive Framework, and we hope that the G20 will be encouraging us to move forward.
What is still left to be decided on?
Everything is to be decided. I mean, what has been decided so far? One, that there is an issue with the digitalization of the economy and that there must be a solution. One. Two, that we should work on a two-pillar approach. One pillar on nexus and profit allocation, and one pillar on a minimum tax, kind of multilateralization of GILTI. That was decided. Three, we decided to work on the work program, and this work program was endorsed by the G20. That said, now we need to move to this unified approach, and it is to be decided whether countries will be comfortable or not with this. We hope they could be, and if they agree so, then we'll have to negotiate all the different factors and elements of the unified approach, the goal being that in the course of 2020, as early as possible, could be January, we have an inclusive framework meeting, or more likely June, then we could have a political agreement on the architecture of a solution. So this is what we are pursuing for the time being. And in that process, there will, of course, be some public consultation which will be organized.
It's interesting you say that there should be a political agreement because it's sort of a tense political time now. The U.S. and France are in a sort of standoff over France's digital tax. What concerns is that bringing to the OECD, and is that taking up any time from the broader negotiations?
Well, first, there is no news here. We have known for a while that in absence of a solution, there would be unilateral measures. And we can see it with France, we can see it with Italy, which voted a digital tax, has not enacted it yet. Same in Spain, same in many countries. So there is no news here. And that contributes to the tension. That also contributes, I think, to the awareness that without a solution, we may face some serious backlash, countries walking away from the current standards, and that's why it's urgent to find a solution. I will not meddle in the Franco-American business. They have their own conversation, but what matters, and you can find that in the communique of the G7 in Biarritz in August, is a reference by the G7 leaders to the need for a multilateral solution at the OECD. So this is our roadmap. Find a multilateral solution at the OECD with our membership, which is much broader than the OECD membership.
So do you mean that unilateral measures are perhaps driving the urgency and not holding back the negotiations?
I haven't said that, as you have noted. I have said that in this tense environment, you have countries moving unilaterally, which scares, rightfully, a number of other countries or a number of companies. That's a bit messy sometimes, but that contributes to this tension. And what matters, and that's our job at the OECD, is to remove the tension by showing progress at the OECD.
What is the OECD doing in order to calm the concerns of countries that are perhaps giving away their taxing rights under Pillar 1?
First, we're doing an impact assessment. We're working on that. We won't have the results published, I think, until year-end because it's a huge task that we started only recently. We have first findings, and I can just disclose that what we're talking about, depending on the hypothesis you make, but it's not a massive shift. So countries should relax a bit about that, one. Two, what we're doing to relax countries is to engage them. Engage them all in the conversation and find a solution where you do not have big losers or big winners. You need to find the right balance there, and that's our work to try to massage that so that countries can agree.
When it comes to the winners and losers, what is it that is the incentive for countries that are giving away taxing rights besides tax certainty and global stability?
Well, I think you've said it. Tax certainty, I think, is key for business, but also for countries which want to promote their own businesses. You have champions, national champions, you want them to do well, to perform abroad, and what they need is tax certainty. So if you're a small open economy, which are the ones which may be concerned by the future of our work, well, you should be even more concerned by lack of progress at the OECD. Because if we don't make progress, it's not one French DST that you'll face, but tens, if not hundreds, of unilateral measures, taxes on turnover or departure from agreed principle. So I think the counterfactual is extremely important, but you need to get it right. What is the counterfactual if we don't have a solution? It's not the existing system with everybody saying, okay, well, we'll keep with Article 9, Article 7. And by the way, on Article 7, you have UN model, OECD model, AOA, non-AOA, so it's already a bit messy. No, the counterfactual is about unilateral measures, and that doesn't look good.
Well, I think one of the trade-offs for countries participating in this negotiation is that there's going to be a reframed dispute resolution mechanism. The disputes of the future have the potential of being multilateral, and the mechanisms in place now to resolve disputes are mostly bilateral. So what is the OECD doing in order to get countries like India, which has several very
random
prominent
example, right?
Random example, very prominent tax disputes there. What are you doing to get them on board with perhaps giving away some of the sovereignty that comes with these disputes?
You're absolutely right to say that tax certainty is a key component of a global solution. We cannot ignore this any longer. By the way, we started work on tax certainty and we suggested the G20 to take it on in 2016. So we're very active on that front. On the very down-to-earth aspects of that, working with tax administrations, joint audits, ICAP mechanism. So we're doing this groundwork, which I think is essential. But we also need to do better in terms of dispute resolutions and dispute prevention. And on the dispute resolution front, we have Action 14, peer review. They're working. When you look at the figures, you can see that there is significant progress in many countries, including India. But we need to move a step forward, which probably is something like compelling, binding, effective dispute resolution. I didn't use arbitration, but something which would be equivalent in terms of impact. And that's what we are working on with all the members of the inclusive framework, India included. And I can say that we have very constructive discussions, noting that a number of countries are saying arbitration, never. So let's find something equivalent which would make all the countries comfortable and which would reach the goal, which is at the end of the day to eliminate double taxation. And if you have an effective mechanism, actually you will have fewer adjustments, fewer audits, which would result in double taxation.
Is the ultimate goal of the BEPS project to come to a political agreement?
Yes, of course. Our goal is to have all the countries to agree on common rules. Businesses are global. This issue is global. You need a global solution, recognizing that you have different perspectives and you need to make all these sovereign countries to agree. Now, what if some don't agree? Well, we'll face unilateral measures, and that's the incentive, I think, for all to move ahead. It's difficult. It's challenging, but there is urgency, as you can see from the G20 communique, the G7 communique, or the positions taken by a number of our members.
The sovereignty of these countries isn't going anywhere. So once a political agreement is reached, what is the binding nature going to be that will prevent countries from moving forward and going their own way?
That's a very good question, which is about the implementation. If we reach a deal, how do we make sure that it's not just an updated model tax convention you put on the shelves and you ignore? It's about getting all the countries to move together, probably at the same pace. Because if you're a European country, you want to reach a deal. Well, you would like the US to implement it at the same time as India. You don't want to give away taxing base to India and not getting anything from the US. If you're the US, you would probably also like that all the countries move towards more certainty. So there is something like the simultaneity of the implementation of the rules, and that is part of our work program. We've mentioned the possibility of multilateral convention. There may be other ways. We're exploring that. We first need to reach a political decision, and then we'll see how we implement. But you're right, that's a big question.
What would unified implementation look like?
We're not yet there, but unified implementation means that it's coordinated and you have common rules. You currently have on Article 9, on the arm's length principle. So what you need is a mechanism where countries work together to make sure that they have the common interpretation of what they would have agreed. We have these mechanisms. We have the Global Forum on Transparency for all the transparency stuff, and it's working. You have common terms of reference. You have peer review. We've been doing that on BEPS implementation as well. So we're not new in this field. I think we have experience. We have more than 10 years of pretty intense tax cooperation. And I think that has prepared the ground for such a coordinated implementation.
So what happens if the OECD misses the 2020 deadline?
Well, unilateral measures are across the world. I mean, that's pretty dirty. That doesn't look good. But I think that we have an urgency, and you're right, people should think of what happens. So for the businesses, which are currently waking up saying, what? We thought it was only for Google, Facebook, and the digital companies, but we may be at stake because the scope of our measure may go beyond, or will go beyond, pure digital business models, maybe consumer-facing type of businesses. For these businesses waking up now and starting lobbying and say, no, do nothing, well, think of what happens if there is no political agreement at the OECD, no strong message. Not sure it's good news for anyone.
I have a bit of a cheeky question to close on. The OECD's efforts is to bring tax certainty. That's kind of been the name of the game. What would you say for people who feel the OECD is perhaps driving some of the uncertainty around the global tax debate?
I would say it's a cheeky question, but I would go beyond and say it's true that the BEPS project could have been seen as introducing more uncertainty. The response here, and I strongly believe in that, is what if we didn't do the BEPS project? What if we didn't drive all these countries to work together? Do you think the world would be better today? Do you think everybody would be happy with Article 9 as it is, and India, China, developing countries would not have moved? I'm just asking the question.
Thank you so much for joining us today,
Thank
Pascal.
You. Thank you.
For more news on the digital tax debate and other stories, visit news.bloombergtax.com. We'll be back to our regular Talking Tax schedule next week with a new episode that Friday. That's it for this week's edition. I'm Suri Belusu. Thanks for listening.
Cases and Controversies is all about the Supreme Court.
One of the seven
Come on.
Well, I agree
Be
with
serious.
You.
We sit down with leading practitioners and scholars to break down these cases.
I mean, I'm glad you brought that up, so I didn't have to.
Interesting,
right?
That is
See?
Interesting.
I guess my imagination is running wild.
I'm just kidding. Tune in every week for our deep dive and sneak peek episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
As always, check out the latest at news.bloomberglaw.com.
Ha ha ha.